Darrell Diamond Jones was 19 years old when he was convicted of murdering an alleged drug dealer in Brockton. Now 30 years into a life sentence without parole, Jones maintains he's not guilty, and a motion for a retrial based on new forensic findings is currently before the Massachusetts Court of Appeals. This morning, our series, Reasonable Doubts, reopening the case of Darrell Diamond Jones, produced in collaboration with the New England Center for Investigative Reporting, continues as WBUR's Bruce Gellerman weighs the trial evidence.
After a six-day investigation, Brockton police arrested Darrell Diamond Jones for murder. Five police officers would testify for the prosecution at his trial, which makes this statement very surprising when you consider the source.
I wasn't that impressed with the case when I read it over. I've seen strong cases. That was my life, being a detective.
Richard Sprawls wasn't just any detective. He was chief of detectives of Brockton Police. He oversaw the murder investigation and received the detective's reports. Now, 30 years later, he's reread them.
There's just no smoking gun. There's no fingerprints. There's no positive ID. It just seemed helter-skelter. What evidence is there that he did it?
The prosecution's case was based almost entirely on the testimony of seven eyewitnesses. No motive was mentioned. There was no physical evidence linking Darrell Jones to the murder.
Seven witnesses, nobody picked me out. Nobody in court said that's him. Everybody said, nah, I can't say it's him. Nobody's never identified me in court.
Paul Jones, no relation to Darrell Jones, was a key eyewitness for the prosecution.
They asked me, could I identify him? Is he in this room? And it's obvious who's on trial, you know. And I told them, no, I'm not 100% sure that that's him.
And neither was Denise Perkins. She also witnessed the murder, but said in court she only got a quick glimpse of the killer's face. During the investigation, detectives showed her photos of suspects, and she identified one as Darrell Jones. But there's no way to confirm that, because Brockton police didn't bring that photo to court. The pictures Perkins viewed were never entered as evidence, so the jury never saw them. 2 years ago, the Innocence Program obtained a sworn affidavit from Perkins. In it, she states she wasn't certain about the picture and felt police pressured her to choose one. Brockton detectives showed different photos to other eyewitnesses, and several said they also felt intimidated by police.
Yeah, they were coercing me. They wanted him convicted.
Edna Levine testified for the prosecution. She was one of five people in a car parked near the murder scene at the time of the shooting.
They threatened, if I didn't testify in court, that I seen Darrell pull a trigger, I would be going to Framingham and my baby would get taken away.
Framingham is the state prison for women. Levine used cocaine and had a record for shoplifting, but she didn't ID Darrell Diamond Jones as the killer.
Did I see Darrell pull a trigger? I never seen Darrell pull a trigger. I didn't see anybody commit that murder. That's what I'm telling you.
Another woman named Terry Lynn Starks was also in the car near the murder scene. WBUR and the New England Center for Investigative Reporting tried, but couldn't locate Starks. She was a cocaine addict and the only eyewitness Brockton detectives videotaped.
11th, 1985, at approximately 10:30 p.m.
A week after Darrell Jones was arrested for the murder, Brockton police arrested Terry Lynn Starks for prostitution, held her overnight in jail, then questioned her. She later said that police told her things would go better for her if she cooperated.
She is not a suspect in this offense, but for the records, I will advise her of her rights.
In the video, which was shown to jurors, Starks is asked to pick out a photo of the shooter. She chooses one, the detective holds it up, and says it's a picture of Darrell Jones. But the image is blurry, unidentifiable. Earlier in the interview, she's asked to describe the shooting. Like other witnesses, Starks says the shooter was noticeably shorter than the victim.
You're talking about the small guy holding
the small guy was holding the top guy by his jacket. He had got on the sidewalk. And when he got on the sidewalk, I saw a gun. And I said, a gun.
Who had the gun?
The small guy had the gun.
But suddenly, something strange happens on the tape. It's a scene of comedian Phil Silvers as Sergeant Bilko in the 1950s TV sitcom. Then the interview continues.
I think the jury should never have seen that videotape.
Absolutely.
I think it was inherently unreliable.
Lisa Cavanaugh, director of the Innocence Program, says the videotape of Starks identifying Jones was of critical importance to the jury at trial.
And I think without that videotape that Durrell would have been found not guilty in a heartbeat.
Video and audio forensic experts hired by the Innocence Program examined the copy of the videotape using techniques only recently available. The experts believe 2 minutes and more of the video could be missing, the tape deliberately altered. At the trial, a detective claimed he accidentally hit record while showing the video to Jones's lawyer, Ken Elias. But why press any button if the video is already playing? Elias never asks that question, but he's clearly surprised by the detective's courtroom explanation, asking, "You mean you recorded something over the tape while I was there?" Again, Lisa Cavanaugh.
And the lawyer is completely bewildered. It's a moment of rare candor, I think, where the lawyer had absolutely no memory of this happening, and we think that's because it didn't happen. It did not happen that way.
At the trial, Terry Lynn Stark said she couldn't be positive that Durrell Jones was the killer. Later, defense attorney Ken Elias tried to recall her to the stand, but she was in prison in Framingham. Rather than delay the trial, Elias surprised the courtroom and began his closing statement. Durrell Jones.
I didn't think I could get convicted, just the bottom line. I was like, this is some BS. I'm going home. You know what? I'm so comfortable with it. I didn't think it could happen. I just didn't think it could happen.
On the first day of deliberations, jurors asked Judge Chris Byron to define reasonable doubt. On the second day, they told him they were deadlocked. Byron ordered them to continue. Then jurors asked to see the gun. And on day three, the all-white jury reached a verdict.
No doubt at all, that man is guilty of murder in the first degree.
Anthony Padula was the juror who asked to see the weapon. And even though it was untraceable and there were no fingerprints, Padula says he knows his guns.
There's no doubt in my mind. And I remember the weapon he used had three safeties on it, and he disconnected all three safeties to shoot that guy. He was guilty of sin.
To me, they didn't prove that he did it.
Eleanor Urbati was another juror. She thought Durrell Jones was innocent.
It was very sketchy, very... No one saw him.
At the start of deliberations, the jury was about evenly split. But by day three, Eleanor Urbati was all alone.
I thought to myself, well, if all these people are saying he's guilty, and I'm saying he's not, I started to doubt myself. I just didn't believe he did it. And like I say, I was the last holdout, and I should have never changed my mind. And I'm sorry for that. I'm sorry for him that I didn't, because that would have been the end of it.
But for Durrell Jones, it was the beginning of a life sentence without the possibility of parole. For Terry Lynn Starks, whose altered video interview is now the basis of Jones's appeal for a new trial, it was a fresh start. 2 weeks after Jones was convicted, Starks was freed from prison, her sentences for prostitution suspended. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Bruce Gellerman.